Okay, as you know, it is natural always delivered in English. So now we will hear the second lecture in the series of today, and this lecture will be delivered by UNHCR, representative of Dirk Hacker. And the topic of the presentation today is the UN Refugee Agency making a difference for displaced people and careers in UNHCR. So please give him a round of applause.
I was told the lecture has to be in English, so I have been disappointed. And my Korean doesn't go much beyond what I just said in Korean. So. I would like to, normally I like to walk around and mingle with the audience, but I was told that in addition to you here in the room, we have another room which is watching me by camera, so I have to be here so that the camera can see me. Hello there. Actually, maybe you give me the other mic. I think I'm more comfortable with that. Yeah. Thank you. So today you will hear a number of presentations about the UN. Everybody can understand me? I see no reaction, that's why I'm not sure. Okay. If there's any words I use or you're not sure you understood, you can interrupt me anytime. Just raise your hands. We do it like in the UN when we don't understand something, we immediately interrupt the speaker. So today we will have a series of presentations about different UN agencies. UNHCR is one of the biggest UN agencies. We often use the abbreviation UNHCR. I will tell you what that actually stands for. But normally for people to understand who we are, we actually don't use UNHCR, we use UN Refugee Agency, or just the Refugee Agency. It is a very specialized agency, but I'm sure you can relate to it, because you will have seen pictures of refugees on television and the news and the newspapers, and maybe those of you who are familiar, I guess most of you will be familiar with Korean history. You also know that Korea itself has a lot of displaced people during the Korean War. Many people had to leave. We had the example of UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, who also described how he had to leave his village. They fled to the mountains and then could see the village burn. That is what unfortunately happens a lot all over the world, and you will hear why such things happen, how it happens, and what the UN Refugee Agency does to help those people who are losing their homes and to run away. Okay? Let's start with a little visual. It takes about 5 minutes, I think. And basically tells you everything about UNHCR. I don't know if we can maybe dim the light a little bit here.
They are who we are. We are. Why is that rooted? Torn apart by war, conflict, persecution, and COVID that. All of them people are concerned. United Nations refugees. The Second World War left nations torn apart and refugees fleeing their homeland. More than 1 million of them. Governments needed help. The crisis needed coordination. In December 1950, the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees was established. In July 1951, the United Nations Convention relating to the status of refugees was adopted. A refugee is someone outside his or her own country and unable to return as a result of a well-founded fear of persecution on grounds of race, religion, nationality, political opinion, or membership of a social group. Its founders thought UNHCR's task would take just 3 years. They were wrong. In 1956, Hungarians rose up against Soviet occupation and were crushed. 200,000 people fled their country. It was UNHCR's first emergency. The 1960s saw decolonization in Africa and war, independence war, civil war, border wars. Hundreds of thousands were forced to flee. Refugees were no longer just a post-World War European issue. They could be found across the world. And so the legal foundation guiding UNHCR's work was changed in the 1967 protocol to be a global responsibility for refugees. In the 1970s, the spotlight of conflict shone on Latin America and Asia. In the 1980s and 1990s, new wars erupted in Africa, the Middle East, Southern Europe. The numbers of those in need spiraled upward in Lebanon, Somalia, Sri Lanka, Afghanistan, Uganda. In 1951, UNHCR started with 34 employees. By the end of 2013, it had over 8,000 working in 126 countries. 146 countries signed a convention on refugees. Its work recognized with the Nobel Peace Prizes in 1954 and 1981. By the end of the 20th century, in a world of civil wars, ethnic conflict, natural disasters, there were new victims. Driven from their homes, but not their countries, UNHCR's guiding principles identified a new group of people in need, the internally displaced. Internally displaced persons are persons or groups of persons who have been forced or obliged to flee or to leave their homes or places of habitual residence, in particular as a result of or in order to avoid the effects of armed conflict, situations of generalized violence, violations of human rights, or natural or human-made disasters, and who have not crossed an internationally recognized state border. As conflicts have altered, so has the role of UNHCR. In the Balkans, UNHCR moved to work directly in the conflict, something they've not done in its first 4 decades. It continues to do so. In the new century, the world has the highest number of refugees in over 2 decades. Long, bitter wars in Somalia and Afghanistan, ethnic religious strife in Central African Republic, Syria, South Sudan, an old country in the world meets, both engulfed in conflict. All add to the immense, sad list of victims. The challenges will grow, new, bigger conflicts and old crises unseen, millions of places. UNHCR, over 6 years after its birth, will face them all, innovate and adapt, and counting on protection, one of the strongest in international law. Partnerships with over 900 other agencies, and strong support from donors, governments, and people like you.
Okay. That's an introduction to UNHCR. To people who don't know much about it, I'm going to tell you a bit more. But what did you see? Well, let me ask a different question. What did you see on the faces of the people that you saw in the depression, okay? poverty. Just speak up if you have. People are very sad. People are traumatized. People lost everything. People are somewhere stuck in a new land, in a new territory. They are uncertain about their future. What is going to happen to them? Will they ever be able to return home? Will they ever be able to find what they left behind when they return? Will they be able to continue their education as children, many children in the country that you saw? So that is what refugees go through. It's important to realize that and think about that when I start explaining what UNHCR is doing to help these people. So let me start my presentation. Actually, quite presumptuous title, Making a Difference, but it is really true that UNHCR over the last almost 65 years has been making a difference for people who have been uprooted and displaced, making a difference for the life that they spend outside of their homes, and also making a difference for restoring their life once they are able to return. UNHCR stands for United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. In order for you to understand where UNHCR is, in the whole UN family, like this picture, if you Google it, you can look up United Nations System or United Nations Family, you will see this picture is actually 3 times bigger. I only took a fraction of this picture. So you see that the UN has many structures, and each structure has a lot of different agencies, UN organizations. The UNHCR is just one little tiny part of a much, much bigger United Nations. It's just for you to understand that today you're not talking to the whole of the United Nations when you talk to me, but you're talking to a small, small part of the huge UN organization. You heard most of the basic facts in the movie, but let me maybe single out a few facts that are useful to know when I talk about UNHCR. Those are key dates to start with. Oh, sorry, I forgot to stay in front of the camera. Sorry, guys. Okay, yeah. I can just press the forward button. So 1950 is when UNHCR was actually created by this General Assembly, precisely on the 14th of December. So this year we are celebrating the 70th anniversary of the United Nations, but we also have the anniversary of the foundation of UNHCR on the 14th of December later this year. But if we celebrate the creation of the United Nations, the creation of UNHCR is not really a cause for celebration. It's not like a birthday. Because obviously what 65 years of UNHCR means is depression, anger, trauma, loss of hope for many, many millions of people. So we can celebrate our work, and we can celebrate the courage of refugees to go through what they're going through, but we don't really celebrate UNHCR's founding as a birthday or as something positive. You all know what a mandate is? Sorry, I should stay here. You all know what a mandate is? A mandate is like a task, only it's a bit more official. So somebody has an official task to do something. In the UN we call it a mandate. You can say that in relation to government agencies as well. What is the mandate, what is the task of the Ministry of Health, for example, in your country, or the Ministry of Education? or the police, you know, they have a mandate, they have a specific task. And for UNHCR, the mandate was defined in 1950 as protecting, assisting, and finding solutions for refugees and other displaced people. In 1950, that mandate was given to the organization in a General Assembly resolution. Everybody knows what the General Assembly is? You all know, okay. So basically, we were created by all member states of the United Nations at that time. In 1951, the mandate was actually reformulated into an international law, into the convention relating to the status of refugees, or as we call it more simply, the Refugee Convention. A convention is like an international law. We have national law, and then we have international laws that are signed by many countries and become sort of the way things have to be done. And as you saw in the movie, more than 146 countries signed the Refugee Convention, which means that 146 countries are ready to treat refugees in accordance with that law. What do you think? Is Korea a signatory to that convention? Just yes or no. Who thinks no? Who thinks that Korea, Daehan Minguk, is not a signatory to the Refugee Convention? Oh, come on, there must be somebody who thinks that. Or maybe you all know that Korea is a signatory to the convention. You know. Since when? Then tell me. Okay, you don't really know. Korea is a signatory to the convention, and Korea signed this convention in 1992. It was only in 2013, 2 years ago, that Korea formulated its own national refugee law. So today, Korea is very well integrated in the international community when we talk about refugee protection. In 1967, the meaning of the 1951 convention was expanded to cover the whole world. As you saw in the movie, it started with those pictures from World War II. Initially, UNHCR was created only for refugee issues in Europe. But then when they finished doing that job, the other refugee crisis broke out a bit everywhere in the world. And in 1967, the world decided that the Refugee Convention should be expanded to cover the entire planet. In 2003, that's the last key date, UNHCR was given a permanent mandate. In the beginning, you also saw that in the movie, UNHCR was created actually just for 3 years. So the task or the mandate of UNHCR at that time was to solve refugee problems in Europe within 3 years. It became clear that the mandate had to be extended for another 3 years, and then another 3 years, and another 3 years. In 2003, the international community, the UN, basically got tired of reviewing every 3 years and decided that UNHCR should be a permanent UN organization. We are governed by an executive committee. It's like a government. We are UN employees with staff of the United Nations, with international civil servants. That's on top of UNHCR as a bureaucracy. We have an executive committee. Those are representatives from almost 50 countries who are members of the executive committee and who decide what UNHCR should do and how we should do it. They also approve our budget. We are funded almost entirely from voluntary contributions. So if the United Nations as a whole is funded by mandatory contributions by member states, there's a quota formula by which, in accordance with the population and the GDP, the gross domestic product of each country, it determines how much money they should pay every year to the United Nations. So UNHCR does not get money from that budget. We have to make our own budget and then tell people how much our work costs and then ask governments and private businesses or corporations, but also people like you and me, to contribute to the functioning of UNHCR. Korea has made very generous contributions to UNHCR, growing every year. This year we'll probably get around 15 million. Last year we got about the same amount. But we also have about 100,000, I think that's Shipman, people in Korea who regularly donate money to UNHCR. So 100,000 people every month send money to UNHCR, which is annually approximately 12, 13, maybe $15 million that we get from people in Korea. When you go to Seoul, maybe not in Songdo or in Incheon, but in Seoul, you will often see UNHCR people talking to people in the street, asking them if they want to make a donation to UNHCR. You saw also in the movie that twice UNHCR was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 1954. That was in recognition of the work that UNHCR did to solve refugee problems in Europe after World War II. And in 1981, does anyone have an idea what happened in 1981? I think you're all far too young to know, because most of you were born after 1990, as I can see, and even after 1995. Right? Okay. No shame to be young. I envy you. In 1981, UNHCR was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize because of its work to protect refugees from Afghanistan. In 1979, the Soviet Union had invaded Afghanistan, and almost 5 million people fled Afghanistan to neighboring countries, mainly Pakistan and Iran. And UNHCR had a huge operation to help the governments of Pakistan and Iran to deal with this large number of refugees. So in 1981, we got the second time Nobel Peace Prize. You saw in the movie we have almost, in the movie I think it said something like 8,000. Actually today we already have more than 9,000 staff working in 126 countries, but in most countries we have more than one office. So in more than 300 locations we are present around the world. Our annual budget is over $6 billion. You can imagine if all this is funded from voluntary contributions, how much work goes into telling governments, private corporations, and people around the world about our work so that people make available the money that we need. And we support over 40 million people more or less directly with our work. You will later see that the number of displaced people around the world is actually higher. This is a picture of our headquarters. So we have 126 offices around the world, but this is our main office. Does anyone have an idea where that could be? It's not in Incheon, I have to disappoint you. It's also not in New York, as you might have thought. Geneva, right? Geneva, because the United Nations actually has its main headquarters in New York, as you probably all know. But in order to balance and not to give just the United States the monopoly on hosting the United Nations, it was decided at that time to decentralize the governing structure of the United Nations. So the General Assembly, the Secretariat, and also the Secretary General, Ban Ki-moon, sit in New York, but there's a second big headquarters. We sometimes say it's the European headquarters of the United Nations. It's in Geneva, Switzerland, and along with many other UN agencies like the ILO, the International Labour Organization, the World Health Organization, and a few others are located in Geneva together with UNHCR. In this building, there are approximately 700-800 people, so about 10% of our staff are working in headquarters. There are other headquarters of the United Nations. Do you know any other headquarters of the United Nations? So in New York and Geneva? Rome? Who is in Rome? World Food Program and the Food and Agricultural Organization of the United Nations. Very good. Some other? Austria, Vienna, okay. We have the International IAEA, International Atomic Energy Agency, right? Very important for the Korean Peninsula because of the nuclear issues in the north. A few others. We also have Nairobi, which is the capital of Kenya. And we also have Paris. This organization is in Paris, which is very important for you guys. First of all, because you're Koreans, but secondly, because you're young and you're studying. That is UNESCO. UNESCO is the United Nations Education and Culture and Science Organization of the United. So quite a few places. Say this because many people just think of the UN as New York, and that's all, but that's not the full picture. Okay. Now comes a very boring slide here, but as I know it's boring, I made a more simple explanation here. And those of you who sit in the back probably can't see it well. I need to tell you who is a refugee and who are internally displaced people, as we say in abbreviation IDP. Instead of giving you this complicated definition there in red, I just reformulated it for you in simple words. Refugees and IDPs are people who were forced to flee persecution, war, and conflict. They run for their lives, they lose everything. It's maybe a bit too simple, because many people don't lose everything, whatever they are able to take with them when they have to run. They can salvage that, but in most cases, people are caught by surprise. The war starts, or they are forced to leave their homes with no prior notice. When you travel somewhere, you know 2 months in advance or 3 months in advance, your parents are telling you, we're going to the Philippines on holiday, we're going snorkeling or something, right? You know, at least a few weeks in advance. You think what you pack, what you take with you. Refugees, they have no notice. They are not prepared. They're just like, this moment, something went wrong and they have to run. And often they run just the way they are. The women from the kitchen, the kids from the school, the men from the factory where they work. And so they have just one set of clothes and maybe a few other things they can grab. But that's how they arrive in a foreign land, and then they have to survive. To give you an idea of where we work, practically everywhere, you can see that the biggest numbers are in Africa and Asia, also quite a few in Latin America. You see there are many what we call Northern America, that's basically the United States and Canada. Those are refugees who arrive there from different countries, often under resettlement, when the United States say, okay, there are so many refugees in that area, we allow people to be refugees. In Europe, the numbers have climbed dramatically over the last few weeks. You've probably seen on television, many of you will have seen the picture of the Syrian refugee boy who was found dead on the coast, on the beach in Turkey. Many people are trying to go to Europe now from the Syria situation. Just yesterday, we passed the 500,000 mark for Greece alone. So 500,000 people alone, this year alone, arrived in Greece. Can you imagine? 500,000 people on the move from Syria to Europe. And the number is probably going to reach 800,000 this year. The number is broken down here. In fact, this this number is wrong, don't look at this 35 million. We updated that with this number. It actually has passed 60 million. But you see different categories there. Refugees, asylum seekers. Basically, asylum seekers are people who have fled their homes, who arrived in another country, and are probably refugees, but they first have to be recognized as refugees. They are telling their stories, and the authorities in the country where they arrived review their case, and if they say yes, you are a refugee, then they become refugees. So let's say for our purposes, refugees and asylum seekers are the same. IDPs are different only for one thing, internally displaced people. So as the name already suggests, they are still in their own country. They fled their home, but they went to another city in their country. They didn't cross an international border. They didn't leave their country. So if we go back to the Korean War, technically, you will very often in the history books, you will hear the term nanmin. Those were fleeing their home. They were running away. But most people at the time during the Korean War actually stayed in Korea. They fled from the northern part to the southern part and from the Seoul area to Busan. Technically, these people were not refugees, but internally displaced people. Sorry, there were other categories. Maybe I just stay on the slide. Returnees, those are people who are able to return, either refugees or internally displaced people. When peace is restored in their countries or in their areas, they can return home. Then UNHCR also continues to assist them to rebuild their lives. And so that's why we have the category of returnees. UNHCR is also responsible for another category of people, quite a lot of them actually around the world, called stateless people. You all have nationality. Most of you will have Korean nationality. I see at least one foreigner in the room, although you may also be Korean. I don't know that. Where are you from?
Germany.
From Germany. So you're citizens of the Republic of Korea, right? You have a Korean passport. Is there anybody in the room who doesn't have a passport? Don't be shy. If you don't have a passport, I'll get you one. No, obviously, you're all citizens of a country. But if I ask the same question in Myanmar, for example, I could very easily have people say, I don't have a passport. I am not a national of the country where I live. And around the world, there are between 4 and 12 million such people who live, obviously, they live somewhere, they live in the country, but that country doesn't consider them to be citizens of that country. There are a few such cases in Korea also. It's a very complex nationality law in Korea. You know that you have many ethnic Koreans in the People's Republic of China, your big neighbor. And some of them have family links or through different ways they come to Korea. They cannot immediately get access to nationality. They lose their nationality in China, or they have never been recognized as citizens in China either. They could be stateless. So there are people like that. What that means, basically, is although they may not be poor, they might have the right to work, they might be able to send their children to school, but if you're stateless, you have no paper that says who you are, you can have a lot of difficulties. Imagine for the many things that you are doing in Korea, you have to produce at least some kind of identification card, right? Either you or your parents. And if you don't have that, then you cannot do what you want to do. So people are stuck. That's why there's an international organization responsible, and this happens to be the UN Refugee Agency, although they're not refugees. But UNHCR was given a second mandate to care for and protect stateless people around the world. 60 million people now displaced worldwide. This is the highest number ever since World War II. Since the end of World War II, the world has not seen such a huge displacement of people around the world. I told you we have a budget of over $6 billion US dollars. You might ask yourself, like, that's a whole lot of money. What are you doing with that money? And so here's the answer. What we provide is protection, safety. We register people and give them documents. We take special care of people who are especially fragile or vulnerable. And we provide basic assistance to all refugees and displaced people in need. The first and important one is food. Actually, food is provided by the World Food Program. It's another specialized UN agency, I think, as you know. I don't know if you will have a presentation today by WFP. Not sure. I didn't check the list of speakers. You will have in the afternoon sometimes. Yeah. So water, very important, sanitation, like latrines and wastewater disposal systems, shelter, people have to stay somewhere, a whole lot of simple household items. Yes, when people live in a strange place, they need things to cook, pots and cups and plates and so on. We give that, we call them kitchen sets, also blankets and many other things that you need to survive. Clothing, basic education. We provide only primary education. So you can imagine if refugees have to be away from their homes for a long time, they might grow beyond primary education level, and then people like you, secondary, tertiary education already, like high school, college level, that is not provided. If we had the money to provide it, we would probably set up these kind of forms of education too, but our mandate is to provide basic education. It means for a lot of people, and I've seen this everywhere in the world, I worked in many different countries before, and I've seen a lot of people your age who, because they are refugees, do not have access to education. If they're in displacement for many years, I've seen refugees who were in displacement for 10 years, for 15 years, even 20 years, their life is really disrupted, and especially for the young people, the children and young people, it means their education is disrupted. And if education is disrupted, even if one day they can return home, but without education, they can also not expect to have a very good life, right? Healthcare and also nutrition. What is nutrition? You know what nutrition is? You know. I will not explain. Okay. I will explain. You tell me because I should explain? No. You all eat healthy food, right? So you know what nutrition is. Yes. And livelihood system, that's basically helping people to do something productive, to produce something. In fact, when we have large numbers of refugees, it's not like we dump all the assistance in front of them and let them survive on what we give them, but we kind of try to create a community that starts organizing itself and starts producing what it needs with their own needs. So we only give them what they need to produce things. For example, refugees in Tanzania, if there is land around the refugee camp, we negotiate with the authorities that the refugees can cultivate that land. So we don't give food, but we give them seeds to grow food. Right? So that's called livelihood. And in fact, for the vast majority of refugees, that's the preferred option. Instead of giving them food for every 2 weeks, we give them new supply of rice or sugar and oil and things like that. We give them the means to invest in production of food or other things that they need. We also mobilized the community to elect their own leaders, to have like a little structure to make refugees live a little bit by their own governance. Not we are not their authorities. We don't govern them, but we organize them so that they can self-govern themselves. So a few pictures maybe to illustrate how this works. Unfortunately, the head of this colleague is up there. It's not in my presentation, it's there, but the screen is somehow restricted. Distributing things here, this is what we call plastic sheeting. You see one of those bags has about 10 plastic sheets, and from those plastic sheets, the refugees construct their own houses in some areas. So we also don't like build houses for refugees. We give them basic materials so that they can construct their own houses. Here's a small team of UNHCR interviewing people just to find out what their situation is and how we can help them. And here's another food distribution, I guess, or and then you can see from this second photo, this is probably somewhere in the Syria, Middle East area, that often refugees are in areas where there's nothing around. Like you all used to living in cities, there's some form of civilization, there's like basic infrastructure, supplies, shops, etc. But very often we are in situations where there's nothing around. We have to screen everything there to make sure that refugees can survive. This is a picture from the very recent situation in Europe where many people who arrived in Greece or in Italy then tried to make their way to Germany. So UNHCR is also involved there. This is showing how refugees construct their houses. So you can see UNHCR there, but actually we work together with the refugees. So the refugees are not just sitting idle and waiting for services to be provided, but we involve refugees also to help themselves. So as I said, we provide shelter, water, health, education. We are using this term international protection. When you hear the word protection, you probably think of a bodyguard or something like that. Protection, when we say protection, we provide legal protection. We make sure that the refugees are recognized, that they have a status in their country, in the country where they live, and that they're given material assistance. All that is called international protection. But the second big role that we have is also to find solutions for refugees. We don't want refugees to be refugees forever, for the rest of their lives, but we try to find solutions for them so that either they can return, we call that voluntary repatriation, or if people have been in a foreign country for a long time, we negotiate with that country if these people can be admitted to permanently live there, and maybe even get citizenship of that country. And the third option of such a solution for refugees would be resettlement, which is to say people cannot return, they can also not stay where they are, but there is another country which is ready to receive them. The United States, Canada, New Zealand, Australia have received lots and lots of refugees from all over the world. Korea is starting such a program as well, so we will soon see the first group of refugees from another country to be brought to Korea to live here permanently. It's a very small program for the time being, but the press is also starting to talk about it, so you will read in the newspaper and probably towards the end of the year or early 2016, you'll see the first such program to start. The UN is a big organization, of course. UNHCR is a huge organization with a huge budget, lots of staff all over the world. But It is also honest to say that the UN today works in partnership. We can do a lot, but we cannot do everything, and we cannot do everything alone. So we partner with NGOs, you know what NGOs are? Non-government organizations, right? And the international and national NGOs. There are some Korean NGOs who now want to become international organizations, international NGOs working for refugees as well. You have the Beautiful Foundation, you have the Good Neighbors, I don't know if you've heard, but Good Neighbors, there are others, the Child Foundation, who all want to become active in international humanitarian crisis and also work there as international NGOs. Many private companies also take part in our work. We have partnerships with big companies. I'm sure that I can even see some of you are wearing Uniqlo clothes. Uniqlo is one of UNHCR's big partners. You know that we have so many refugees all over the world. We always need clothes. And so Uniqlo has a campaign. Even if you walk to, if you walk into a Uniqlo store, you might even see or hear an announcement that if you buy new clothes there, that you bring your old Uniqlo clothes or any other clothes that are still okay, but you don't like to wear it anymore, you can bring it there. They will clean it, reprocess it, and they will collect many, many thousands of pieces, and they will send them to refugee camps. So if ever you think that, oh, my wardrobe is now really overflowing, too much, too many things, especially the girls usually have that problem, but maybe also the boys. So if you ever think, I have so many, maybe I can give away two shirts and one pullover or a pair of jeans that are still okay, but you don't wear it anymore, you can bring it to Uniqlo and they will send it to refugees. Don't just go like that, as I'm saying. You should check first with the website or something if the campaign is actually going on there. We also partner with the Red Cross in Muslim countries. We call them the Red Crescent Movement. And that's also very important, as I showed you in some slides before. We also partner with our target populations, as we call them. We partner with refugees, so we involve refugees and displaced people in the work that we do. You're so quiet. Any questions? No? Are you still with me? Are you still interested in the topic? Otherwise, I will ask the next speaker to come and try. It's okay, right? So this is just to show you one example of how we partner and how many partners we have. This is an example from the Syria refugee response in Lebanon. Lebanon, tiny country, but Lebanon has received over 1 million Syrian refugees. And so it's not UNHCR alone. You will see the different sectors where we work, as I was telling you, food, education, health, protection, livelihoods, nutrition, registration, shelter. And for each of the areas, Beirut is the capital in the northern part of Lebanon and other regions of Lebanon, you'll see how many partners are actually working with us. So each abbreviation there is one organization. And so you have some areas where really many organizations work together, and that's what it looks like today. I'm showing this to you also to show if any one of you ever thinks to maybe take part in this kind of work, UNHCR is not the only employer in such situations. There are many other organizations who also provide the same kind of jobs, only that you won't be called UN, but you will work in partnership with the UN. And we have many people who actually enter the UN through the work with our partners. First, they work for a few years for our partners, and then they get adopted the UN. Which brings me to the last topic. I was shown the yellow card, which means I have 10 minutes, now probably 9 minutes. So let me use about 7 minutes to tell you something about working for the UN in general and UNHCR in particular. If you're interested, if not, I will stop here. We can go have coffee. Do you want to know about it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good. So anyone dreaming of becoming the next Ban Ki-moon? It's not going to happen. Because we have a certain procedure in the United Nations. You would have to wait 100 years for another Korean to become Secretary General. But who knows, maybe the medical people will figure out a way that I will probably not see today, but maybe you will be 150 or 160 years old. So just keep dreaming. So there are many ways to work for the UN, but it's actually not easy. You can imagine UNHCR has 8,000 staff working for it. That's like 0.00001% of the world's population. So what is your chance to become one of those 8,000, right? It's almost as competitive as getting into Seoul National University or Korea University. I don't know what the most prestigious universities are. But it is not impossible. For our regular careers, usually it would be to move into the UN after you have worked in another, in a non-UN profession or agency for a number of years, and then you become a specialist at your level, and the UN is interested in your specialized knowledge. So that would be for specialized positions. These are often advertised externally to people who are not already working in the UN, but these positions are very few. Standard positions in the UN are usually filled from within the UN staff. So you can apply only if you're already working for the UN. So basically, that means you can't work for the UN. You can't dream of working for the UN. But here comes the thing for you. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Korea has a program to promote young Koreans into the United Nations. Korea basically pays the salary. Korea selects these people. Every year between 10 and 15, probably by the time you want to do this, when you're graduated, maybe you've worked somewhere for 1 or 2 years, then you apply for this program. I think up to the age of 30 or 32, I would have to check, or you can check on the website. You go through a competition there. It's tough. There's lots of people who want to do this, but every year only 10, 15 people are selected. Maybe by the time you want to do this, maybe 20 or 25. And those can choose positions in the UN to work, and Korea will send them, and Korea will pay their salary to the United Nations. So that's an exclusive promotion program for Korean staff to enter the United Nations. So if you're thinking, really thinking, this would be a very realistic thing, you should study very hard, you will have better chances to get a slot there if you speak more than two languages. You all speak Korean and English already. Study another UN language. What are the UN languages? Does anyone know? Spanish? Chinese? Arabic? French? One missing.
German.
Not German, unfortunately. But German is not German. Russian. Okay? So those are the UN languages. If you select one of them, Arabic, very important right now because of Syria and Yemen and many other situations. But any other language, at least you will enter the competition with a little bit more knowledge relevant to the UN than other people who applied for asylum. So check out the details on the website of MOFA, Ministry of Foreign Affairs. You can also check the website of UNB. How much time do I have? 2 minutes? 5 minutes. United Nations volunteers, that also includes online volunteers and youth volunteers. So basically from your bedroom or from an internet cafe, you can become a volunteer to work for the UN. It's not paid, but to help to do something for the UN, you can look up on UNV.org. UNB jobs, volunteer jobs. You can volunteer for the UN. UNBs are very, very commonly used by most of the bigger UN agencies, like UNHCR, UNICEF, the Children's Fund, WHO, and some others that you will hear about today. These are basically young people between the age of 25 and 35. I don't know if you consider 35-year-old people so young. I do, because I'm 53. So those people who work full-time get paid for their work, although they are called volunteers, but when they work in difficult countries, they have to survive on something and have to have a place to stay. So it's actually not too bad pay, around $2,000, and the housing is subsidized. So people work to provide food, water, shelter, protection to refugees in our case. Some of them work in offices, some of them work in the fields, directly with refugees. Very interesting work. And the advantage of working as a UNB is that when somebody has worked for 4 consecutive years as a UNB for UNHCR, we get the right to apply for full staff position. So I know many, many colleagues who work for me or with me who finished 4 years as a volunteer and then applied for regular UN positions and became regular UN staff. So that's a very realistic thing. Similarly to the JPO program by Korea, Korea also sponsors about 10, 15 UNBs every year to different UN organizations. So there's another competition. You will find that on the same website. Look out for United Nations/International Organizations Recruitment. There's a center for UN recruitment in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and they will advertise these competitions. And then we have another way for Koreans to take part in UNHCR's work, that is through COICA volunteers. Do you all know who COICA is? COICA, Korea International Cooperation Agency. We work very closely with COICA, and COICA is also sponsoring volunteers to work in the UN or in different UN agencies, including UNHCR. here are a few other things that you might look at, although you are probably too young. Most of you are too young to go to this website right now. You need to have a university degree. Then you look up the United Nations Careers webpage. It's actually careers.um.org, as you can see on top. That takes you to this website. This is the UNB website, UN Volunteers. You find all kinds of information, and if you aspire that kind of work, there's a portal that you can access through this site where you can select your name and basically show your interest in volunteering for the UN, and you have to sit and wait and see if they contact you for any work. We have a lot of Korean volunteers in UNHCR. And you see there's a link also on the right side to online volunteering. That's actually a separate website, but you can access it from here, onlinevolunteering.org. You'll find things like a UN agency which needs to translate something from English to French or from French to English, and you can volunteer to do that. You say how many hours per week you can do that. Some works are like designing or redesigning a website for which the UN doesn't have time, but they ask volunteers to do that for them. There are all kinds of jobs there that you can do online. You don't need to go anywhere. You don't need to put any resources. You don't earn any money. You just get a certificate that you volunteer, but you can do something useful for the UN. Look it up. See if there's anything that you think you can do. 1 minute? Time's up. Okay. So here's the volunteering website. This is the MOPA website. Actually, here you see it's unrecruits.mopa.go.kr. You'll find that, I'm sure. And if some of you are interested, just take a screenshot of this slide. I gave an interview in August 2013, and it's quite old, but everything I said there is still valid about working for the UN. You can read my interview on these links. I'll put this slide back at the end. Here also a few other links that might be interesting if you want to know more. We have a global website, UNHCR.org, but we also have a website in Korean, UNHCR.or.kr. CO is wrong, not CO, but OR.kr. We will correct that. And we have on Twitter and also on Facebook and Naver, if you put in UN Nanmingigu or UNHCR Korea, then you will find us. No time for questions now, but I understand we can go outside, and if anyone has questions, you can ask me. It's been a great pleasure. I hope you're not too tired to still stay for the other UN agencies' presentation. Thank you very much, and I hope that one day I will see you working for UNHCR or for other UN agencies. Thank you very much. 감사합니다.